Hello, America, and welcome to a new edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News, where this today we finally got the forensic exam for a couple of Dominion voting machines. This was a court-ordered exam, and a court ordered the release of this private exam by a group, I think it's called Allied Security Operations Group. A little bit of controversy, obviously Democrats, the Michigan State Secretary of State, and the Dominion voting don't like this company, don't like its conclusions, think they're faulty, but a judge has felt they were public worthy enough to order their release today. This is in Antrim County. Remember, this is a county in Michigan where in a Republican county, Joe Biden was originally declared the winner, and then thousands of votes switched when they found an error, whether that was a computer error, human error is in dispute, depending on who you talk to, but there was an error, and then the vote switched, and Donald Trump suddenly won by a large margin, as one would have expected in a Republican county like that. And so after that, a judge allowed the inspection of the logs and the machinery and the code for these Dominion voting machines. And this analysis, I would call it a forensic analysis, that's actually what the court calls it, takes a look at the code and the production and the logs and the error logs. And the conclusion of their authors, again, disputed by some in the state government and by Dominion Voting, which has been very defensive and proud of its machines, is that 68% of the activities on the machines in the 2020 election involve some sort of error, an error rate of 68%, 68, I think, 0.05. And what they... what happens each time the machine throws an error is that it kicks it forward, according to the analysis, to what's known as adjudication, allowing a human to decide what the outcome of each error, which each dispute, each vote sequence will be, meaning someone outside the purview of the American people, the ballot box, is making a decision about what was correct on each erroneous application. That is the conclusion of this forensic report. It's eye-opening. A lot of people are talking about it across the country. If you want to read the latest, go to justthenews.com. It should be at the top of the site, and you'll be able to get a good readout of what this is, what the debate is. Both sides are going to debate this, but the mere fact that someone is even suggesting that voting machines have a large error rate is going to be dramatic and certainly dominate some discussion over the next few days. We're going to go to a quick commercial break here from our great sponsors and advertisers. When we come back, rather than do a monologue today, I wanted to move from Michigan, where we have the voting machine dispute and some ongoing legislative hearings, to Georgia, where the next big electoral race is January 5th. Two Senate races are up for grabs, and I have a guy that's been on the ground. He's an evangelical Christian organizer, so he's pro-Republican, pro-Kelly Loeffler, pro-Senator Perdue, and he is going to talk about what he's been doing, what he's seeing on the ground. I thought it would be fun, even from a person that obviously comes from a conservative or religious perspective, and you know he really is a man of faith, so the Bible and Christianity and Christian values and all the things that go with that are forefront in his thinking. But he's actually organizing voters. And one of the things he's doing is focusing on low propensity evangelical or Christian voters, meaning voters who are Christian, have an interest in American policy, but aren't getting out to vote in Georgia. And he's trying to get them out to vote. He's targeted 150,000 of them. 150,000 is a large block of voters in a state where less than 20,000 votes separated Trump and Biden in the last election. I think it's closer to 12,000, 13,000. But this is one below the radar. Get out the vote operation no one's talking about. David Lane has had some success in the past in getting out voters. He's built large get out the vote machines. He's also built a project called the American Renewal Project that encourages pastors to run for office and to get their constituents in church to go out and vote. There's a pastors and pews component. I thought it would be fun to get someone that's actually on the ground doing stuff rather than the media guessing. Here's someone on the ground that can give us an eyewitness account of what's going on. I thought that would be worth listening to. We're going to spend the rest of the podcast talking to David Lane and what he's seeing and hearing on the ground right after these messages from our great sponsors and advertisers who, by the way, make this show, make Just the News possible. Please support them even as you go into Christmas. Their gifts, their services make wonderful last-minute Christmas gifts, their products, and by supporting them, you're also supporting us. So remember that as you hear these messages. We'll be right back in a few seconds with David Lane, the great evangelical political organizer, now on the ground in Georgia, trying to sway the Senate runoff races, both of those races. In a few minutes, we'll be talking to him. Right back after the messages. Folks, Field of Greens is the healthiest thing I do every day, and I want you on this journey with me. Why? It's literally one scoop a day. It tastes great. I love the fruit flavors particularly, and it's completely improved my life and my health. This is nutrition the way nature intended. When I began taking a hard look at why I wasn't feeling good and why I felt unhealthy, why I was gaining weight, why I was losing energy, it wasn't just because I had hit my 50s. No, it was because I wasn't getting the right amount of fruit and vegetables in my diet. And listen, I'm just too busy to go to the store, clean up the vegetables, cook vegetable dinners, and make sure I hit the fruit. A Field of Greens stepped in. One scoop of powder in my drink or on my eggs in the morning, and boom, I was off and feeling better. And suddenly, I was losing weight. I was sleeping better. My metabolism went up. My blood sugar went down. My cholesterol went down, and my weight went down. And my doctor said, hey, whatever you're doing, keep it doing. You know what that is? It's Field of Greens. That's what I've been doing. Field of Greens is radically different. Each organic fruit and vegetable was medically chosen to support heart and vital organ health. I trust Field of Greens to keep me healthy. I promise you, you're going to love this product. But if for any reason you don't, they'll give you 100% money back guarantee. Now, you're going to get 15% off your first order, plus free rush shipping because of the incredible partnership we have here at Just the News with Brick House Nutrition, and of course, Field of Greens. All you got to do to take advantage of this offer, visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JustNews. That's promo code JustNews at fieldofgreens.com. Don't wait. Go to fieldofgreens.com today. Use the promo code JustNews for 15% off. All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. And as promised, a very special guest. Many of you may have never heard his name, but you have seen his work all across politics for the last 20, 25 years. David Lane is one of the great political organizers, one of the great evangelical organizers in America. And he is dipping his toe into the all-important Georgia Senate runoff races that are scheduled for January 5th, and they will determine control of the Senate. So we brought David in today to talk a little bit about what he's doing, what he's seeing on the ground, what's at stake. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John, for having me.
It is an honor to have you. And I wonder, before we get started, since some of our audience may have seen your work but never really heard of this, describe a little bit about what the American Renewal Project has done over the years, the Pastors and Pews event. It's an amazing effort, amazing movement, amazing infrastructure that you've built to influence elections. Why don't you just introduce a little bit to our listeners what that looks like?
Well, the model began in Texas in 2005 with Texas Governor Rick Perry. And since then, we mobilized evangelical pastors and pews. Somebody's values are going to reign supreme. And if we stay home as evangelical and pro-life Catholic Christians, then the other side that gets their people in, they pass their laws and they impose their will. And so it's easily defended that America was founded by Christians for the advancement of the Christian faith. That's the Mayflower Compact. So all we're doing really is just trying to get believers who, you know, put importance in character and values and virtues to come to the public square. Somebody's values are going to reign supreme. And so we began in 2005 in Texas with Governor Perry. We've been in 20 states now under the radar.
Wow.
I've never done a press conference or a press release under the radar. The currency in politics is how many votes can you bring to the table, or how much money can you bring that brings votes to the table. press conferences, press releases, getting a shout out on Fox News, nothing wrong with it, but that's really not currency, or at least not large denominations of currency. So what we do is we, in a sense, stay under the radar, and we mobilize, and we've been in 20 states now. We've put up 20,000 pastors plus spouses at a hotel, fed them three meals, and never asked them for a penny. And the Lord has put a little less than $50 million in the door from less than 10 people since 2005. So we're really involved in these states. We're involved right now in Georgia. We have what's going on there with us is that there's really three components to our what we're up to. Number one, we actually, through analytics, we identify low propensity, mid propensity evangelical voters and pro-life Catholic Christian voters that are not going to vote. And we actually knock on their door. And so we're going to knock on about 120,000 doors in Georgia to have 40,000 contacts. And it's basically a get out to vote. You have a Christian responsibility to participate. And that's number one. We're doing a social media outreach where we have Georgia pastors that have recorded 30-second spots. And so we'll be showcasing those through social media all across Georgia. And then the last thing is, actually, we're gonna wait till the dust settles. We're not going to go in because there's so many people doing so many things in Georgia. So after, you know, toward the middle of the year or in the first quarter, let's say, we're actually going to do pastors' luncheons across the state. And the goal will be, you know, 75 to 100 pastors there. And our goal is to get pastors and spiritual leaders to engage the public arena. And it was what Jesus said in Matthew 16:18. He said to Peter, upon this rock, I will build my, he didn't say church. He used a Greek term, ekklesia. Upon this rock, I'll build my ekklesia, and the gates of hell won't stand against it. And he could have said, upon this rock, I'll build my synagogue. Upon this rock, I'll build my temple. He didn't say that. He used a Greek word that everybody knew what he was talking about. And the Romans had their, when they set up their structure in their society on the new areas, the apostle went out and set up an ecclesia, is how they governed. That's what Jesus said that he was going to build. And somehow over the last 100 years or so in America, the church, American Christendom, has adopted a subculture where we've moved inside the building. We have Christian celebrities, Christian stars, Christian publishing, Christian television, but we have no footprint in the culture. That's not what Jesus said that he was going to, his kingdom assignment was for you and I to be in the public square and the rough and tumble. And so that's what we do. And that's what we're trying to get pastors. I write a weekly op-ed piece to 80,000 pastors. And we're trying to get the church to come alive in America if we're going to survive. And somebody's values, again, will reign supreme. And if we stay home, and that's about what we've been doing. You know, the numbers are about 50% of Christians are not registered to vote. About 50% of those don't vote in a presidential year, and about 50% of those don't vote in an off-year election. So we're at 12 to 15%, like in 2018, and 25% in 2020. So we've got to get, if we're going to turn America back to him, and that's the goal, that's our goal, then we're going to have to engage the culture.
It's remarkable. And I want to throw some numbers out there, because that 80,000 number, when you start to think about that, let's assume the average congregation size is 100 people, and that's probably low, but 80,000 pastors reaches 8 million congregants just in your pastor's network, right?
Right.
Now, I know we've talked about getting out the vote, and we're going to go back to Georgia in a second, but another thing you've done is you've gotten out candidates. And how have you done that? You've done it by getting pastors to move from their church to move into the political square and run for office. Yeah. Talk a little bit about the training you're doing and all the pastors that have now run for local municipal office.
Well, let's talk about my pastor in California, Rob McCoy.
Rob McCoy, right.
Was a high school American swimmer, swam in college, still has records. I think Rob is in his mid-50s now. Well, in 2014, the assemblywoman, who now is actually the Senate minority leader, Shannon Groh, she called me first, and she said, your assemblyman in your area is going to run for Congress. Rob should run. And I said, well, have you prayed about that? She said, no. I said, well, we'll pray about it. So she prayed about it, I'm sure, but then she called Rob. And of course, Rob's first instinct was, I'm not going to do that. So this was at the end of November. So this is 13. So in the second week of December, in the middle of his sermon, Rob announced that he was running for the California Assembly seat. Women cried, men passed out at the church. And so the Republican Party invited Rob to Sacramento to inform him, we have no interest in this. We're not interested in you running. We're not interested in your issues. And they recruited a 26-year-old male Hispanic, De La Piedra, and gave him $1 million. And it's a jungle primary in California, which means everybody runs and the top two vote getters gets into the general election. So Rob, in the primary, several times had 250 volunteers on Saturday that knocked on every door in the district and called every home. On primary election day, the Democrat got 43% of the vote. Rob got 32%. De La Piedra got 21%. So now my pastor, Rob, is in the general election. The Democrats spent, now this is a state assembly seat, state rep seat. The Democrats spent $6.3 million against him in the election.
Assembly seat?
An assembly seat, $6.3 wow. million.
He That's spent a lot of money, eight. Folks.
He spent $1.8 million. And the night before the election in November, Reince Priebus then was the RNC chairman. He texted or emailed me, your pastor's going to win tomorrow. He's looking at numbers. Newt Gingrich emailed me. Let me know how your pastor does tomorrow. Mike Huckabee emailed me. Let me know how Pastor Rob does tomorrow. It took about a week, but it turned out 130,000 votes, he got beat by 3,000 votes. Hmm. But he ended the campaign with 650 volunteers that had knocked on every door in the district and called. He had an army marching. And it was in that week of waiting that I wrote, then I had 100, we had 100,000 pastors on our email list. I wrote to the 100,000 pastors and I said, I want you to pray for 30 days and ask the Lord if he's calling you to run for office. We're going to have a meeting. Governor Bobby Jindal called the first meeting in Baton Rouge. In
January, former governor of Louisiana, right?
And then, so through 15, we had Bobby Jindal, Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, Senator Lankford of Oklahoma, all were calling meetings pray about if God is calling you to run. And we had somewhere around 200 that ran in 16. We had 300 or so or 400 ran in 18. We don't keep up with it. In fact, probably a year ago now, I was reading something that Don Hinkle was writing in the Pathway newspaper to the Southern Baptist of Missouri. And he mentioned in this article that six pastors had run in 18 in Missouri, which I knew nothing about. So I got to, we'd been working in Missouri, so I was interested in it. What turned out, six pastors ran, five won. Three of the five were elected to the state representatives, and they were the ones, they were part of the process that led to charge. The only state in the union had reduced, put restrictions on abortion had been Missouri in 18, and those three pastors were part of the charge that led that. So the point is that nobody's confused that, the kingdom of God is going to arrive on Air Force One, as Chuck used to say. But, if we're going to turn America back to him, that's the goal, is that we're going to have to get outside of the walls of the church and get back into the culture and get back into the public square. And that's where things happen. In fact, this morning I was looking at somebody had written, America is made up of its people. It is governed by those who are active and engaged. Evangelical and pro-life Catholic Christians are going to have to bring our values to the public square if America is going to be saved.
It's a remarkable effort. And a lot of people talk about how they can get out the vote. But you actually did a study back in 2016. I think you used Dr. Darren Shaw,
yeah,
who is one of the Fox News analysts or the data chief at Fox News. And you're focusing on low propensity voters. So just to put this in perspective for our listeners, these are people that are unlikely to vote. They've got a Christian background. They probably lean right in their perspective, but they just aren't people who've been out voting or even registering to vote. When you went back and you looked at the efforts in the states where you played in 2016, what did Dr. Darren Shaw say was the end data result of your work?
Well, let's frame it. So there's nothing good about the Republican Party. There's nothing good or bad about the Democrat Party. They're holding vessels that you pour things into. Like-minded constituents are housed there. But you can say this without fear of contradiction. Evangelical and pro-life Catholic Christians are not housed in the party. that believes in taking a baby's life at the end of it, or a homosexual marriage. That's not where evangelicals and pro-life Catholics are housed. So if I could tell the story, I'll try to make it quick, but two miracles happened to me in 16, if you can believe it, in a week. And so the first miracle was somebody gave me, a farmer, probably a billionaire, a farmer gave me, called me on the telephone and gave me $9 million on a telephone call that turned into six battleground states, Florida, Ohio, Missouri, North Carolina, Virginia, and Iowa. And he is on August the 16th, and we had a field team, and we went into those six states, and we knocked on and called in 60 days, 1.7 million low, mid-propensity evangelical voters that were not going to vote. And Dr. Darren Shaw, the study, an independent third-party study, showed that we increased Christian turnout by 5 to 7% in those six battleground states.
Wow.
And we did the same drill in California in three congressional districts in 18. He did another third-party independent study, and we increased those three congressional districts with increased Christian turnout 6% in those three congressional districts in California. And it's hard work. It's knocking on doors.
Yeah.
It ain't
just putting up Facebook ads. It's a lot of ground game, isn't it? Yeah.
And the exciting thing to me about what's happening right now in Georgia, as I mentioned, there's a group from a church with their youth pastor from Oklahoma that's in, I believe they're in Savannah, and there's a group from North Carolina with their youth pastor that's in Augusta, knocking on low propensity, mid propensity evangelical voters' doors. And the significance of that is that these are Christians that are having to defend their worldview and their values door to door. And it takes stick-to-itiveness and discipline and rejection and all these traits that they're learning going door to door. These are your Christian operatives and mechanics and candidates. 10 or 15 years from now, these are the guys that are coming into the public square. It's really exciting what's going on that the Lord is doing about that.
It's remarkable because you're trying to just influence a singular event here in Georgia on January 5th, the runoff, where there are two Senate seats up. But when you built this with an idea that this is a gift that will keep on giving, because you're going to train a whole new generation of activists on the ground and candidates, and they're going to get frontline experience that they can take with them into politics. What inspired you to structure it that way?
Without over-spiritualizing it, I was one of the wildest men that ever lived 40 years ago, and yeah. I came to Christ.
Yes.
But I'm a political mechanic, really, an operative. I write a weekly op-ed piece to 80,000 pastors, and it's spiritual, but I'm a political operative and mechanic, and so without overdoing it, I think the Lord gave it to me. I was with Newt Gingrich two or three years ago, and I'm 20-minute meeting, I'm leaving his office, I have my hand on the door, and Newt said, "Hey, Lane, you know what your legacy is?" I said, "No." He said, "Not pastors and pews events, and those are tremendous. Your legacy is these pastors and spiritual leaders running for local office. You'll never see it in your lifetime, but 30 years from now, you're going to have changed America." And that's the hope, because it's easy to defend it. We started out, Christians founded America on a mission for the advancement of the Christian faith. And so now we've lost that. We've lost our culture. We've lost the Judeo-Christian heritage of the country. And, you know, the deciding to put the Bible into public education, or deciding to remove it from public education, is all spiritual. It's all religious. Somebody's values, and you know, the progressives, the secularists, they frame it like that's neutral. That's not, their values are not neutral at all. It's a religion. It's the same thing as Christianity. Somebody's values are going to reign supreme. That's why evangelical, pro-life Catholic Christians have to come to the culture, have to come to the public square if we're going to turn America and save it.
Now, the people have asked me quite often lately, how is it that a red state like Georgia suddenly had so much blue in the last few elections? And I think obviously some of the answer is what Stacey Abrams has done since the 2016 election to motivate progressives and liberals and young millennials. And there's obviously some Democratic shift going on, people from the Northeast moving to the Southeast to escape taxes. ironically. But how daunting is the task? And what are you seeing from the Democrats? Whether you agree with them or not, they clearly have put together a voter machine that we haven't seen in a long time in Georgia.
Well, but Stacey Abrams, as you know, she has every right to do that. In fact, yeah, she should do it. And so the problem is not Stacey Abrams. The problem is us, evangelical and pro-life Catholic Christians, half not registered to vote. Half of those don't vote. And half of those don't vote in an off-year election. We have to bring our values to the public square. And I think it's part of changing the church. I mean, the model, which is we talked about earlier, is that somehow we bought into this. I'll tell you a quick story. I won't tell you what city, so it won't be personal, but in the South, in a large city in the South, the city council passed a pro-LGBTQ in 16, I think it was, and the mayor was all for it. And here's the church in that area had 45,000 members and a $70 million annual budget. And the mayor was reelected with 14,000 votes and a $300,000 budget. And a church that's got 45,000 members and a $70 million annual budget can't even mow their own backyard. And another city that's, a community around that large city on the other side of the city, somebody told me they raised on a Sunday $96 million for a building program. That does not fit in, it doesn't seem like, to Jesus's kingdom assignment from Matthew 16, 18. Upon this rock, I will build my ecclesia, and the gates of hell won't stand. We have to get out of that model that has taken us nowhere over the last 100 years and bring back to the ecclesia and bring back to the culture and bring back that somebody's values are going to reign supreme. And the people that are ruling the cultural high mountains at this point, you know, the media and Hollywood and education, they don't believe what we believe. They're imposing their values on America, and that's what we Christians have every right to do. And going back to Stacey Abrams, she has every right to doing what she's doing, and I'm glad she's doing a good job. We got to do a good job on our end.
When you're on the ground right now, what are you seeing right now? Is there energy? Is the election integrity issue sucking up some of the oxygen in Georgia? If you had to handicap how January 5th turns out, what are the keys for each of the two parties, Democrats and Republicans?
Turnout is the key, as you know. It's enthusiasm is the key to the turnout. And so it's my thinking at this point that evangelical and pro-life Catholic Christians are going to move in Georgia on January the 5th. I believe that. That's why we're in there knocking on 120,000 doors. If it's up to us, and it's not up to us, it's up to the Lord. But, you know, the old saying, pray for a garden and take the hoe. So we're working real hard right now in Georgia, and we're expecting to win.
And the what is the question that is motivating voters? If you're a conservative, what is driving you to the polls? Obviously, control of the Senate is, you know, the technical issue, but usually there's a larger issue. And it seems like in watching the debates between the candidates the last few days, there's a really pronounced question that both sides are asking: what type of America do you want to live in going forward, and who has the Senate may determine that. Is that the question that this election is going to turn on in Georgia?
I think so. I mean, we don't back or oppose candidates because this is 501c3 right. dollars. So we're trying to turn out, you know, evangelical and pro-life Catholic Christians. But I think that's really the bottom line would be that if a party, it's the shame of what happened in a sense to the Republicans in 16, they had the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and I don't know what they did. Yeah. And when the Democrats get in control, to be fair to them, I mean, they own it. They're in it for business. So they impose all this radical, from our standpoint, radical stuff. And so that's the, if the Republicans were to lose the Senate, two of those Senate seats, then it's going to be a bad day from an evangelical pro-life Catholic Christian standpoint, going to be a bad day for America. But in God's providence, I don't know what he's up to, except that he wants us to get back engaged in his model in the culture.
And it's a big moment in American history, just so many different issues that people are fighting over that will be decided by this generation of politicians, maybe for a long time to come. One of the things that has played out in 2020, we've done a lot on this show because we've tracked the work of Jenna Ellis and Phil Klein and the Thomas More Society and the Liberty University and Matt Staver, is how COVID created this extraordinary debate over whether religion is essential, whether a government can order people not to attend church during a pandemic. And of course, there was a historic ruling at the Supreme Court the night before Thanksgiving. A lot of people might not have known that because they were worrying about what turkey was going in the oven the next morning. But this year has really put the church and the state in a conflict that we haven't seen in a very long time. In your mind, how is that playing out, and what are the long-term consequences of that debate?
Of course, I think it's spiritual. And so I think there's something going on besides COVID. You know, we had to endure Russian collusion for 3 or 4 years. And turns out, because of you and others like you that were exposing it, it was all a hoax.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had, I think it was in March or April, you would remember, you had Dr. Nutt Witkowski, who's this sort of famous German.
Yes, he's a data scientist. Yeah.
Yeah. And so remember, he said on your show that, you know, his advice in March or April was get the old people and the invalids out of the way.
Right.
Get
protect
the kids
them.
In school. Yep. Run your business. The only thing that kills a virus is herd immunity. And you have to get to 75% or 80%. When you do, it's over. Get kids in school. Get the old people out of the way. Go about your business. And 30 or 45 days, well, all you've done is prolong what's happening. That's what he said in March or April. And he was 100% right.
When you look out now, I think one of the most interesting sentiments in the Supreme Court rulings that went favorably for the churches was that just because you have a pandemic, you can't set aside the Constitution, that even in the midst of a pandemic, the people have to be treated equally. So if you let 100 people gather at Walmart to shop, then you can't tell 100 people they can't congregate safely with social distancing at a church. And I think that that sentiment really has sunk in the courts in the last couple of months since that rule, or actually a month since that ruling. What are the next big religious freedom cases that you see coming in the coming weeks and months?
Well, we're in the middle of one right now. Is that, of course, in California, Gavin Newsom in March shut everything down.
Right.
My pastor, Rob McCoy, we just talked about, that became this. I didn't finish the story, by the way. He got beat, but then he became the city councilman. He became the mayor of Thousand Oaks, California. We actually shut down our church in California, I think, from April, May. And when Governor Newsom, when they were looting and rioting and burning the buildings in Los Angeles, and Governor Newsom tweeted, "God bless you. We hear your rage, and God bless you, and go forward." My pastor said, "I'm done." So he went back to having church. Our church ran about 400, Calvary Chapel, Thousand Oaks, about 400 on Sunday, not counting the kids in the nursery. And the next Sunday, we had 2,500 people at church. And we're running right now about 2,000 a Sunday. He's been to court 4 times now. Pastor McClure in Calvary Chapel, San Jose, I'm told, has been fined $750,000.
Yeah, I think
so
I just
far.
Read that the other day. Yeah, amazing.
Cheon in Pasadena, Pastor Cheon, who's Korean, he's been fined, I think, $450,000 and received a letter from the city prosecutor. What you're doing is criminal. You're going to go to jail.
Wow.
So I think this is the beginning of something bigger that's going to happen. And these guys that I'm talking about, and my pastor now having been to court 4 times and got another hearing coming, these are champions that are standing in the culture. And so as bad as it is, I think it's encouraging that Gideons and Rahabs are beginning to stand across America.
Using the biblical allegories, people really are standing up in ways that, you know, a couple of years ago we might have been complacent, but it really has brought this issue of equal treatment of the churches to the forefront. Your predictions right now, put you on the spot as the last thing. I hate to do this, but it's always fun to. If you had to guess today, on January 7th or 8th, when all the votes are counted in Georgia, do we have a Republican-controlled Senate or a Democratic-controlled Senate?
I think you have a Republican-controlled Senate. As I said, we're really involved, as other people are, many other organizations. We're not the only game in town, but we're the only game in town that's knocking on low, mid-propensity evangelical voters' doors with Christian kids with their youth pastors, which is, these are the men of Issachar that the Old Testament, that know the times and know what to do. So these are the up and coming. There's real hope for America. I want to say that because we've been negative most of the day. There's real hope for America because I believe evangelicals and pro-life Catholic Christians are coming to the public square.
They're definitely been more active in the last four or five elections. A lot of it, you know, from your work. But there are just so many important legal issues that have worked through the cases, and this confrontation between government and religious liberty has become one of the defining issues in the courts the last few years. So Republican Senate, and then as you look out over 2022-2024, what does the Republican Party need to do to keep this remarkable 75 million person coalition that Donald Trump built and grow it? I mean, when you look out over beyond evangelicals, you've got, you know, more African Americans coming to the party, more Hispanics coming to the party, more middle class and working class people joining the Republican Party. It's a different party than it was in 2015. How do Republicans build it, and what do Democrats try to do to suck some of those people back into their vortex?
Well, the reason that I think that it's changing is that at some point, to be fair, I guess the battle was between Republicans and Democrats. Anybody who thinks that what's going on in America today has anything to do with Democrats or Republicans is really confused. This is a war between two ideologies, Christianity versus secularism. It's easy to defend it. Not only were we started with Christians, but the biblical education, I remember Fisher Ames, the founder Fisher Ames was writing, who was a co-author of the First Amendment. He was concerned that you're taking the Bible out of public education in the late 18th century,
Yeah, right.
And he's concerned about that. And so here, somehow in the last 100 years, as you know, first they took out prayer, then they took out the Bible, and then they imposed abortion. And then that was in 73. In 1980, they removed the Ten Commandments from the walls and the government buildings. And now they've imposed, they found in the Constitution of all places the right to homosexual marriage. And so it's just really obvious. Secularism is a religion, as well as Christianity is. And it's somebody's values. And secularists have imposed their religion on America. And we've allowed them to do that through giving them the schools, giving them government-run education. What they were doing before they shut the good thing about shutting the education down in California right now, what they were doing to those, grooming these kids through what they were doing to public education was just criminal in California. So, we got to get our people. Righteousness exalts a nation. Solomon said, the glory of a nation is in righteousness, not in its GDP or its government-run buildings and programs. The glory of a nation and individual is righteousness. We have to get back to values and virtues if we're going to be a righteous people and a righteous nation.
Well, I'd say this election has been a defining debate. And as you said, there are just two views of the world that are now very pronounced, and the choices are clear. If you believe in secularism and socialism and big government, you've got one path. If you believe in religious liberty and faith and Christianity as a core Judeo-Christian core to American governance, and you've got another vision. It's a remarkable thing to see the lines so clearly drawn, and both sides are so clear about where they stand that the American people certainly the Georgia voters will have a very clear choice on January 5th. David, I want to thank you so much for the time and what you're doing. We'd love to get you back on after the Georgia race to get a postmortem about what happened and what's next in electoral politics in America. So we'll get you back.
Thank you, brother. And you're doing a great job at Just the News.
Oh, thank you so much, David. We really appreciate it. Well, we'll be staying in touch and keeping a close eye, as everyone is, on that amazing two runoff race in Georgia. All right, folks, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up for the day. Hey, folks, as we approach another critical election, a wave of concern washes over America. Recent studies reveal that an astonishing 56% of our fellow citizens report feelings of anxiety or dread about the upcoming presidential election. That's why I stand with AMAC. AMAC is more than a senior discount organization. During these challenging times, they fight for common sense and hope that our nation returns to traditional American values. Visit amac.us/justnews today to seize an exclusive election year special, a 4-year AMAC membership for just $30. That's right, you heard me right, 4 years for 30 bucks. As an AMAC member, you're not only enjoying money-saving benefits, but also the AMAC magazine, free Social Security and Medicare advice, a trusted voice in Washington, and a community of like-minded patriots who love this great nation. Take advantage of this election year special, 4 years for $30, and be part of the solution over the next 4 years. By becoming an AMAC member, you're strengthening a movement dedicated to preserving the principles we hold dear in this great country. Join now at amac.us/justnews. That's amac.us/justnews. Folks, if you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay up letters. Millions, I say. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why the IRS targets you and not millionaires? Well, because millionaires have tax lawyers. You don't. You'll pay up. Plus interest and penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need them now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. Like a preferred direct line to the IRS, they know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. So schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. To do so, call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000 or visit tnusa.com/justnews. That's tnusa.com/justnews. All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. I hope you enjoyed David Lane. He clearly comes from a evangelical Christian conservative perspective, but he has real ground intelligence about what's going on. You heard him say Stacey Abrams has done a good job, and the conservatives have to match her in this new voting ecosystem that has been built in Georgia, and with tens and literally hundreds of millions of dollars now flowing in to influence that race. I think David's insights as to how and what is going to happen on the ground should be meaningful to all of us as we head into the holiday break. Tomorrow, we'll have another big guest, some more breaking news. I expect to have a new exclusive on justthenews.com that I think will be worth talking about. So be prepared to come back tomorrow for another edition of John Solomon Reports. And while you're waiting, be sure to check out the breaking headlines at justthenews.com. All right, folks, have a blessed night. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Hey there, it's Amanda Head, and I am thrilled to introduce to you my new exciting podcast, Furthermore with Amanda Head, broadcasting weekly from sunny Los Angeles, California, and brought to you by the dynamic Just the News Podcast Network. On this fresh and engaging podcast, I delve into the latest news with a little bit of a twist, exploring the furthermore of every story. But this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill news commentary or politically charged program. I interview a diverse range of guests, including business leaders, entertainers, musicians, educators, experts, politicians, and many influential figures from both the United States and around the world. So why not make your Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays a little more interesting? Tune in on your preferred podcast platform and discover Furthermore with Amanda Head on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button and be sure to download the latest episodes. I can't wait to have you join me on this exciting journey.
At Just the News, we break the stories others in the media ignore or are too afraid to tell. We did it on Russia collusion, Hunter Biden, and the security and intelligence failures that preceded January 6th. Our stories have real impact and reach because we stick to the facts. I'm John Solomon. You can help me expand our honest, unvarnished, and unbiased reporting by becoming a premium member at Just the News. You'll get an ad-free experience and exclusive member-only access to events, and you'll be helping us dig up more truth. Join today at justthenews.com/subscribe.